and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
That's right. Wake up. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning to you all. How are you, man? Mark Riley, nice to see you.
How you doing, man?
This is the moving day, and I must say, Mark Riley, you are incredibly calm for somebody who is in the midst of such a nightmarish event as moving.
Well, the nightmarish event was yesterday when we closed. I mean, that was the thing. You know, you have to sign all these papers, and then that's right. But after it was all said and done, it was hallelujah.
So it's your house.
Yeah, it's
our house.
It's
a done deal.
It's a lovely house. The only problem is...
Good for you making that correction right away, our house. Good for you.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, I got to worry now about whether or not they can get to bed in the bedroom so I can actually get some sleep tonight. That's, you know, I don't want this to disrupt my sleep patterns.
Oh, yeah. Well, good luck with that. I mean,
yeah,
what about just the weirdness of being in the other guy's house?
Well, you know, I thought seriously about staying in a hotel tonight.
Yeah, maybe you should, man.
Yeah, just so, you know, get the juju out of the...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's always that weird moment where you're in a new place. Like, I know that some woman moved across the hall from me, and I know that I actually had this moment where I'm like, it must be so weird, because I remember the first time I moved into a new place, you're sort of like, wow, what was the guy who lived here before doing? What was this, you know?
Have you ever moved into an apartment where there was a murder?
Dude, no!
I did. I didn't know about it until I had been there for like 6 months.
I didn't tell the people that moved next door either that a woman lay dead in there for 3 weeks before anyone did anything about it. I don't know if that's the right thing to say. It's like, oh, you guys are moving in? Oh, well, welcome to the neighborhood. By the way, some woman lied dead in the hallway there for 3 weeks. But it looks like they cleaned everything up. It's a lot nicer place. It doesn't even matter now.
Yeah. They painted.
Yeah. There was a clump of hair that they cut off her dead head that was sitting on the floor when they came in to pull the furniture out of there. But it looks much nicer now. And she was a nice lady.
You know who tells the weirdest stories about that sort of thing?
Who?
Cops.
Yeah, oh, I bet.
Cops who discover dead bodies?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why so many of them smoke cigars, by the way.
Oh, really?
The
cops kind of freaked me out when they came for that one, because, you know, it was like right when I got back from vacation, remember? And the cop knocked on the door and said, have you seen the woman who lives next door? I'm like, no.
Oh, wow.
And they had to come through my apartment to go out on the fire escape and come back. And the guy made me feel guilty. He's like standing in the hallway. He's like, you don't smell it? And I'm like, no, it just smells like the regular garbage this building smells like all the time. I mean, how do you decipher garbage from humid, weird, you know, dead smell?
Cigar smoke. You know what they do? They actually break up a cigar. Make a pile of almost like incense, and they light it on fire because that really does get rid of the smell of dead bodies.
Oh, good. Well, maybe that's why I didn't smell, because I was smoking those dumb cigars in my apartment. I'm like, sorry, I didn't know. I didn't know I was smoking cigars in my apartment. So, Chris, you all right, buddy?
I'm good. I actually moved into an apartment where my friend overdosed.
Really?
Did he die?
No, he actually luckily survived.
Oh, so that's not the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If he would have been dead, then it would have been weird. You know what I mean? But just the overdosing, it's like, then it doesn't have the same resonance when you say, some guy almost died here. Who cares? In what apartment did that not happen? Oh, by the way.
I'm trying to keep up. I should just lie.
He died. No, I think every night before I go to bed, I think I'm almost dying. You know, I don't even know why, but, you know, when I go to, I get paranoid sometimes. I'm so stupid. My wife's at home in that, you know, she's in our house out west, and, like, sometimes I just think of her, it's like, she's less scared than me. She's tougher than I am. I'm laying in an apartment, bolted in Queens, going, someone's going to get in here and hit me in the head with a golf club. For some reason, last night it was a golf club.
Why? Because they don't like your comedy or something?
I don't know what the hell for, because I said some bad stuff about Scientologists on stage last week, and I'm nervous. I used to be afraid that the Republicans were going to send a death squad out to get me. Now I think the Scientologists
are going
to...
That could still happen.
Oh, come on, dude. You're in it with
you
me.
You were in the National Review, pal.
You're
that
in
was
it
you.
With me.
It was you that asked Frank Lautenberg about Karl Rove's treason, and they put it in the National Review.
Why are you tipping that, man? They didn't have a name.
That's published by Bill Buck. Oh, sorry.
They didn't have a name attached to that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right, man. So
I gave
now
it away.
You just ratted me out, Riley, and now I'm going to take a hit. All right? You're going down with me, buddy, if I go down. Folks, John Bolton evading the constitutional requirements of Senate consent again. He's done this in other instances. Bush went ahead and installed John Bolton as ambassador to the UN yesterday. This ended the five-month stalemate between the White House and a sustained filibuster by both Republicans and Democratic senators. And this was... I think Riley, very true to character for a president that has absolutely no respect for the Constitution and is tyrannical in his actions when he doesn't get what he wants.
Can you imagine how Kofi Annan had to speak through clenched teeth about we welcome him to the United States? Come on!
Yeah.
This guy is over the top. He is temperamentally unsuited to be a diplomat. Just ask that woman who he chased down a hotel room hallway and banged on her door. The man is unsuited for this job, but he got it because Dick Cheney wanted to pay him off.
Yeah, well, that's what this is an administration that's built on, you know, repaying favors, that's for sure. I mean, John Roberts and the 2000 election, I mean, there are things there that are going to come out as we get closer to the nomination process.
Well, see, that's what they have in common. Bolton, too, helped job the 2000 election in Florida.
These guys pay back their friends. And among the other accusations against Bolton, aside from chasing a woman down the hall in a hotel room screaming at her, is that, you know, he twisted intelligence that's shaped to his own neocon ideology. In other words, he was the perfect fit for the Bush administration. Moving on, man, the space shuttle is up there.
I told you, didn't I?
Oh, man, come on. For the first time ever, NASA will send an astronaut out of the shuttle to remove filler material that is protruding out from the heat-resistant tiles on Discovery's underbelly. You did say that.
Yeah.
But they're careful to go against what you said yesterday. If you don't know what they are, these gap fillers are thin fabric stiffened with a ceramic material and used to plug gaps between shuttle's tiles. One keeps tiles from vibrating against each other and has no purpose for reentry. The other is designed to prevent the repeated overheating of a gap between two tiles. That's the one that you worry about.
Mm-hmm.
If he can't pull them loose, this astronaut, Steve Robinson, will have to use a special space hacksaw. The space hacksaw to cut them flush. Apparently, though, here's where they said they didn't mince any words either. Discovery can return safely without either gap fillers in place. But then the big question is, well, then why are they sending them out in space to fix it?
To fix it if it's
right?
So well fixed already.
The guy, apparently during the spacewalk, astronaut Steve Robinson will be dangled from a robotic arm and maneuvered to the bottom of the shuttle. Apparently, the way they picked who would go out, they drew straws and then said, no, I'm kidding.
Is this like some Erector set?
Dude, who's going? I'm not going. Who's going out there? Yeah, it is. It sort of is like Erector set, I think.
Oh, Lord.
So let's talk about this guy, Paul Hackett. You know, we haven't covered this a lot. This is Ohio's 2nd District. This is a congressional runoff, right, Riley?
Yeah, it's a congressional run. I believe a special election. He's running against a Republican woman, and it's a heavily Republican district. But he seems to have a real shot. He is an Iraq war vet.
Marine Corps reserve.
Major, yeah. He did his time over there, and he jumped all over Bush, by the way, publicly for that May 1st, 2003 stunt of his.
Right, to bring it on?
To bring it on. I'm sorry. I thought it was the mission accomplished thing, but you're right.
He's definitely using his military background to criticize the administration, to rally a different type of Democrat in that area, and I imagine rally some conservatives. Apparently, the district, as you said, Riley, is very Republican, and it regularly reelected Rob Portman for 12 years, but he went on to be appointed to a U.S. Trade Representative post after 12 years, as I said, in that seat. So Hackett might win this, which would be a nice... not only a symbolic gesture, but it would be good for the district to get a Democrat who is really a new style Democrat. This is a new thing we're seeing in that he is a veteran of the very recent war and has a real strong place to come from when he's critical of the Republican administration.
Absolutely. He's 43 years old. He's a relatively young guy. And the military is not his only criticism of Bush. He also does not think Bush's tax cuts should be made permanent.
Yeah, well, that's good, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd really be interested to see. I guess we'll know by tomorrow. Apparently, he raised about $40,000 yesterday.
Yeah.
So he definitely has some support. Now, here's what's going on. Karl Rove, it's looking to me more and more like he is guilty of perjury. There is some proof in the press that he is guilty of perjury. And Robert Novak, the evil gnome Republican stooge boy, tried to write a self-apology, tried to cover his own ass yesterday in a column. And we're going to get into that in Rove in just a second. It's 15 past the hour. Good morning. It's Tuesday. You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark.
You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the fuck up for 10 seconds?
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
19 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Good morning. It's Tuesday. I slept okay last night. I mean, you got to be going out of your mind with all the moving stuff.
I didn't go to bed until like about 10:15 last night. It's partly because my daughter woke up, and you know, it was a convoluted night. And then I woke up without the alarm.
Yeah, it's tweaky when everything's in boxes and things are weird. We're gonna have the iNews in a couple minutes, but right now let's get into this. Apparently, White House officials may have learned that Valerie Plame was married to former Ambassador Joseph Wilson weeks before his July 6, 2003 op-ed piece that was criticizing the administration. Now, this is a big thing because the focus of the investigation right now is when and how the officials in the White House learned about Valerie Plame's identity and whether it was actually a lie that Karl Rove said he learned from the press. Now, I have something sitting right here in front of me of 11 separate instances in which the administration officials disclosed information on Valerie Plame. This came out of Henry Waxman's office, the senator. Or he's a congressman, right?
Henry Waxman, yeah.
One, the disclosure by Karl Rove to columnist Robert Novak. That was in the column dated July 14, 2003. Robert Novak first reported that Plame was an agency operative on weapons of mass destruction. Two, disclosure by a, quote, senior administration official to Robert Novak. That was his second source. And in a second, we're going to talk about Robert Novak's recent column of him trying to defend himself for being a stooge for the Republicans and doing exactly what Libby, Scooter Libby, Cheney, his right-hand man, and Karl Rove, Bush's right-hand man, wanted him to do when they wanted him to do it. And then there was a disclosure number three by Karl Rove to Time reporter Matt Cooper, which a lot of us know about. Four, disclosure by Scooter Libby to Time reporter Matt Cooper. Five, disclosure by, quote, administration official, unquote, to Washington Post reporter Walter Pincus, which is the one we're going to talk about right now. So that's five out of 11. These guys, this was obviously a well-articulated strategy on behalf of the White House officials within the president's office, within the White House there, saying that we're going to take this guy down.
This now goes back to the first week of June 2003, almost a month to the day, before Joe Wilson's critical op-ed in the New York Times. Walter Pincus approached the CIA asking about Wilson's trip to Niger. At that point, the CIA contacted Valerie Plame's unit, which, of course, was the one that had sent Joe Wilson to Niger. That same week, the Undersecretary of State, now, again, that same week in June of 2003, Undersecretary of State Mark Grossman asked for and got the memo from Carl Ford from inside the State Department on the Wilson trip. That's the one that ended up on Air Force One with Powell and the rest of them.
Yeah, so, a couple days after the op-ed ran.
But see, apparently the seeds were planted before the op-ed ran.
Weeks before, this thing was floating around. Powell had seen it. Armitage might have seen it. Walter Pincus is a reporter for the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. So this is what's happening here, is that what we're trying to figure out, what this is really coming down to, is whether or not Karl Rove said to Special Prosecutor Fitzgerald that he learned, under oath, that he learned from reporters, from these press people, of Valerie Plame's identity. If he said that under oath, and what we're seeing now is that that is clearly untrue and that is provable in the investigation, which it seems like it's coming down to, he would certainly be guilty and prosecutable, is that a word, of perjury. Mm-hmm. I personally believe it's treason, but it certainly could come down to perjury. What scares me, though, a little, Riley, is Bush got on the mic and said, quote, Carl's got my complete confidence. He's a valuable member of my team, end quote. These are the strongest words since this investigation became public that come out of the president about Karl Rove, his right-hand man. He's been very hesitant to say anything about this other than they're still investigating. Now, this is the president saying that he can't talk about people who are sitting right behind him until the investigation gets finished. And now he's saying this. I don't know if this is a political move or he knows something that's making him feel safer, but either way, you know, Bush is guilty. He's as guilty as Rove. He's as guilty as Cheney. He's as guilty as Scooter Libby for doing doing what they do. They took us to war on a lie. When they were criticized of that, they took a guy down. They took his wife down. They endangered the intelligence community of this country. They endangered future undercover operations to fight terrorism. They are guilty of high treason. They are guilty of perjury. And this is all coming out because George Tenet instigated an investigation into this leak, because George Tenet was used by this administration and bullied by this administration to give the intelligence that they needed to justify their false premises to go to war in Iraq, and Tenet was left holding the bag, and this is the price to pay. So I think that George Bush is just as guilty, and he's caught in the crossfire between the neocon cabal that he works for and the Central Intelligence Agency, and I hope they all go down, at least in the history books, Riley.
Well, at this point, it's entirely possible that Karl Rove will go down in flames. It is going to be very difficult to continue the line that I found out about this from reporters, when there seems to be pretty ample documentation now, that the idea of Wilson's trip and Valerie Plame's role, if any in it, was circulated within the White House, the State Department, and the CIA a month before Wilson's op-ed piece. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is going to be, was Karl Rove in the loop at that time? If he was such an important member of Bush's team, how could he not have been in the loop at this time?
No, I think he was definitely in the loop, and I think there are liberals and Democrats and progressives and reactionaries like ourselves that think that Karl Rove is so smart and so cagey and so incredibly involved with everything that somehow or another we're all playing into some sort of ploy here. I hope that's not true, but you know, you got people, you know, it's like it's human out now, Rove.
Oh, yeah, but you know what?
My car broke down. Damn that Karl Rove.
No, let me tell you something. If you want to know how guilty these people are, watch how they parse language. Remember that the Republicans jumped all over Bill Clinton during the Lewinsky thing about what the definition of sex was, define this, define that. Well, now you're starting to see, well, I didn't say something was authorized. I didn't say this. In other words, parsing their language in the same way that they decried with Bill Clinton. He was talking about sex. They're talking about war.
They're talking about the real thing, not just, sexual exploits, but the real thing, guilty of killing thousands and thousands of civilians, almost 2,000 American soldiers, thousands injured. This is the real deal. And what we're going to talk about later is Robert Novak apparently couldn't take it anymore and had to speak.
Weasel.
Yeah, he's a weasel. What a turd. What a spineless turd. That guy's a Republican stooge. But that'll be in a little while. We're going to have somebody talking to us. Bebek Degompache, who is our Iraqi journalist, is going to shed some light on a very horrendous bit of business in Iraq where an Iraqi civilian was shot brutally by an American soldier, and he was a relative to the ambassador to Iraq, and it's pretty heavy. But we're going to talk to him after the break, and also we're going to do the iNews. So hang out; it's definitely an engaging story and something you should hear. 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. That's a little soft, Chris. What is that? What are we listening to?
That's Dave Matthews.
It's horrible. What is wrong with you?
What's the matter with Dave Matthews?
I felt like I was listening to some sort of weird, easy listening station in 1974. It's despicable. That guy's got no personality. What was that music? It made me, you know what? It literally made my heart go, like, it made me feel soft all over, which is bad. It's bad. It's flaccid. That's what that means.
It's music for women, Mark.
Flaccid music. Okay, there you go. It's like Kenny G. That's it. That's what you like. That's what you like, Chris. Kenny G music.
Dave Matthews will never be a guest on the Morning Sedition program.
No.
I used to love the fat guys.
We'll be broadcasting live from the legendary CBGBs in Manhattan this Friday. We have little Steven Van Zandt from the E Street Band and the Sopranos scheduled to appear, plus comedian Jim Gaffigan, live rock music, free coffee. That's CBGBs at the corner of Bowery and Bleecker from 6 to 9 a.m. this Friday. Come on down. Sometimes it's hard to know what the mainstream news is saying. That's why we got the iNews 5000 to decipher the headlines. So let's feed it some. What do you say? From the New York Times. Bush appoints Bolton as UN envoy, bypassing Senate. Bush appoints Bolton as UN envoy, bypassing Senate. Translation, damaged goods delivered through back door.
Ooh. Nothing, huh?
Right, yeah. Bush appoints Bolton as UN envoy, bypassing Senate. UN translation, UN ambassador appointed by Supreme Court appointed president. There you go. From the Chicago Sun-Times, Bush taking 50th trip to Texas Ranch in 5 years. Bush taking 50th trip to Texas Ranch in 5 years. Translation, Bush invades yet another arid wasteland. From Medical News Today. All right, Chris. All right, I'm sorry, man. I love Dave Matthews. All right, from Medical News Today, many body-conscious teens use supplements to improve physique. Many body-conscious teens use supplements to improve physique. Translation, hottest new prom theme, roid rage. Okay, here we go. Let's get into some serious stuff. Earlier this summer, a 21-year-old Iraqi man was shot and killed in Iraq by an American Marine after returning home from college. The man might have become just another nameless civilian casualty of the war had he not been the second cousin of Iraq's ambassador to the UN. Joining us by phone from Baghdad, Iraq, is Newsweek magazine's Baghdad correspondent, Babak Daganpache. Good morning, Babak.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, Babak.
Why don't you tell our listeners how Mohammed Soumaid, I don't want to mispronounce his name, so why don't you tell me what his name is and tell us how he was shot and killed by a Marine.
His name is Mohammed Soumaid, that's the pronunciation. This is all according to the family's account. You know, the military is still investigating the incident and haven't released their version of what happened yet. But he had come home. He's a college student here in Baghdad and had gone home to this village where his family lives out in Anbar province, which is, one of the hot spots where the insurgency is really going in full force. And during a raid of his family home, the family says that he was pulled into the master bedroom by a handful of Marines, and they heard a shot a little while later. They didn't immediately know that he'd been killed. But after a bit of time passed, about an hour or so, then they let the family in and they found the body in there.
Now, Mohammed Soumaid had no connection with the insurgents, right, Babak?
Well, who can say that absolutely? You know, of course, the family, insists, and you have to take the credibility of a person, as highly ranked as the UN ambassador, who's saying that this is my relative. He was just exactly what the family claims. He was a college student, but it is possible that I suppose the military investigation may turn up something otherwise. But from the evidence that I see, it certainly doesn't seem that way.
Now, Babak, this has gone pretty far up the food chain, as you point out. This is the second cousin of Iraq's ambassador to the UN. It has already been brought up to both General George Casey, the top military leader in Iraq, and it was brought up to Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld by the Prime Minister, Ibrahim Jafari. Does that ensure, in your judgment, a fair investigation of what took place here?
Well, certainly, the pressure is on. Being under scrutiny like this, being in the spotlight, definitely I think General Casey and also General Petraeus, who's been overseeing the training of Iraqi forces, he's been involved at some levels too. So definitely they're going to try to investigate this incident in a lot more detail than perhaps if it was another contested shooting of an ordinary person who didn't have these links to somebody like the UN ambassador. So I think definitely the pressure is on to, come up with something clean and not make it seem like a whitewash.
Does that mean that there is a possibility that someone would face criminal charges in connection with this young man's death?
I suppose it's possible. Again, the military has refused to really say what they've come up with so far. They've refused to show their hands, so it's tough to say, but it's definitely in the realm of possibility, that somebody could face charges on this.
We're talking to Babak Daganpache, Newsweek magazine's Baghdad correspondent. He is in Iraq. We are talking about the killing of Mohammed Soumaid. I read your piece, and it was it's a beautifully written piece, and it really captures a very human element about, people in Iraq, how they live in Iraq, how they are, there is no difference in a lot of ways between, how people live there in terms of their family situations, and just the intrusion and accommodation of Marines coming into their life, coming into their house to raid something, and how this has become common practice. And you know, I was very surprised by some of the reactions of the Marines that were captured by you in talking to the family.
Right, right. You mean just the general impression of how these raids take place and invading their daily routine?
Yeah, yeah, and just like what were some of the reactions of the Marines that the family told you about?
Well, you know, the family, you know, they, even after this incident, I mean, some of the relatives still weren't, you know, sort of hardcore anti-American. I mean, they do admit that these sort of attacks take place, you know, around their village and from their village, mortars are fired at American bases. But in general, yes, I mean, it seemed like this incident, you know, was a particularly nasty one. As the mother described it, she said that when she was told about the killing, that there were a handful of Marines laughing. And that, in general, they were very aggressive. One of the younger brothers of the victim talks about being sort of manhandled and pushed around by a translator who was with the Marines. So altogether, I mean, the impression is you know, not a very favorable one for the Marines.
But Beck, do you think you're over there? You've seen a lot in terms of the way the U.S. military operates there. Do you believe that a byproduct of this investigation will be a different way that the Marines will end up doing their business on these raids?
It could be. It could be. And I guess again, it really comes back to what their results of the results of their investigation turns out to be, because you know that's going to be what their accepted version of the truth is. If they admit that this was a mistaken or you know even a deliberate shooting of a civilian, then yes, it could have far-reaching implications. But you know, in general, it's tough for them to change the way they do these things and carry out these raids because of the level of threat. You know, because there is this risk of suicide bombers, because there is this constant risk of car bombs and things like that. You know, some of these guys you definitely have to feel for too. You know, they get very jumpy. They're out there and you know, they're constantly surrounded by danger.
Yeah, but Beck, let's shift gears a little bit and tell me what the general reaction is on the ground to the announcement by Rumsfeld about you know, taking out a lot of troops, a significant withdrawal in the next year. What is the reaction? Is there fear, or is there a certain amount of relief?
I think it's a mixed bag. You know, there are large numbers of Iraqis who would definitely like to see, you know, a reduction of U.S. Troop presence, but at the same time, they realize that, you know, the presence of these troops may be what's, you know, keeping things from getting a lot worse. Potentially, you know, there's always talk of civil war or, you know, increased sectarian conflict, but you know, again, it's just mixed. It seems like the Iraqi leaders, like Prime Minister Jafari, were a bit shocked by this announcement. It didn't seem that they were really expecting that.
In other words, they weren't told. Did you get the impression that they had been kept out of the loop on this?
That's hard to say. You know, it's certainly possible. But I think you know the other side of this is, possibly this announcement could have also been to prod the, you know, this government, which really has dragged its feet in many ways, to, you know, get their business together and move forward with the political process, especially this, you know, the writing of the Constitution, which needs to be done by an August 15th deadline. So, you know, they could have been surprised. They could have been sort of blindsided by this with, you know, the idea that to sort of push them to keep things moving on the political front.
Now, Bebek, you write for an American magazine, and I'm curious, from your own personal perspective, how much anti-Americanism do you see from everyday Iraqis? Do you experience?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily anti-Americanism. I would say it's sort of an anti, you know, U.S. military feeling. As an American citizen, I wouldn't say the ordinary Iraqi has any, you know, great deal of animosity or hostility towards, you know, towards U.S. citizens. But it's just really the, you know, this ongoing occupation that has lasted, you know, a lot longer than anybody expected, really. And that's really what's getting some Iraqis worked up. And that, you know, if there are any negative feelings, I think it's more directed towards the political leadership in the U.S. and the military, not American individuals.
All right, Bebek de Gompachet, one last question. In terms of we just heard yesterday that there's going to be a deepening in the relationship and bond between parts of the Iraqi government and the Iranian government. What is your personal reaction to that thrust in the political situation there in terms of the possibility of civil war?
Well, to some extent, I mean, these deepening ties between Iran and Iraq are inevitable. I mean, these countries are, have deep ties, religious, ethnic ties, mm-hmm. between the Kurds, between the Shiite groups. It's sort of inevitable that these, that the two countries come closer together. But really, I guess the question that's been hanging for months or even, since the end of Saddam's regime is just exactly what sort of influence Iran is having here. And I think the answer to that is they are really hedging their bets. They are having positive influence in some ways, and at the same time, they are, maybe reaching out to some of the more sinister groups out there that are creating problems in Iraq.
Okay, Bebek, it was great talking to you. I hope you're well. Take care of yourself.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks,
okay,
Bebek.
That was Bebek de Gompachet, Newsweek Magazine's Baghdad correspondent. We'll be back momentarily with the Cliff Notes, so stay with us. We've got a big show coming up.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Fifty past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. It's Tuesday morning. Hope you're doing all right out there. We'll be broadcasting live, folks, from the legendary CBGB's Rock Club in Manhattan this Friday. We'll have little Stephen Van Zandt from the E Street Band and the Sopranos scheduled to appear, plus comedian Jim Gaffigan. We're gonna have some live rock music, free coffee, tons of giveaways. That's Friday morning at CBGB's at the corner of Bowery and Bleecker from 6 to 9 a.m. I will be at Giggles Comedy Club the night after. That's this Saturday in Seattle for two shows. You can go to giggles comedy club.com for ticket info. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Scientists say hurricanes are becoming more intense thanks to global warming. Scientists call the findings both surprising and alarming. Surprising because no one seems to be doing anything about it, and alarming because no one seems to be doing anything about it. President Bush dismissed the idea of global warming and said that hurricanes are evildoers that hate our dryness. The Army is now recruiting the poverty-stricken people of American Samoa, Micronesia, and the Northern Mariana Islands. The Army says recruiting is going so well in poverty-stricken territories, it's even thinking of closing its office in Trenton, New Jersey. Officers say islanders make fierce fighters in Iraq because they hate the insurgents' fancy lifestyle. A new book says Jimi Hendrix pretended he was gay to stay out of the Army. So I was right, man. The lyrics really are, excuse me while I kiss this guy. While I kiss this guy.
Oh, Lord.
What? You know it's true. Hey, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. I would do that if I, I don't know. No.
I can see you in uniform now.
I did register as a conscientious objector when I was in high school when there was a fear that Reagan would reinstate the draft.
Really?
Yep. Rafael Palmeiro. Is that how you say his name? I'm not a baseball guy. I don't want to act like I know what I'm talking about, but this cat was suspended for 10 days for violating Major League Baseball's steroids policy on Monday, nearly 5 months after the first baseman told Congress, quote, can we hear it?
I have never used steroids, period. I do not know how to say it any more clearly than that. Never. The reference to me in Mr. Canseco's book is absolutely false.
I would say he was quite a liar. He's a Baltimore Orioles guy,
He's a Baltimore Orioles guy and, ironically enough, a spokesman for another performance-enhancing drug, Viagra.
So then I guess I have never disappointed a woman with my firmness, ever.
Yeah, were you lying about that, too? You know what's ironic about this? you're looking at a situation where during these congressional hearings, Palmiro came off as the good guy. The I don't use drugs, Canseco, who had written a book where he alleged that Palmiro had used steroids.
This happens all the time. People lie about this stuff, and then they get caught.
Yeah, but they got that. You're not supposed to be. The baseball players have been put on notice. Do not put anything on or in your body that you don't know what it is.
I'll tell you something, though. First of all, this is the highest. He's the highest profile player to fail the test under these stricter major league policy guidelines that took effect in March. And also, I was watching this Mickey Mantle documentary. Now, I'm not a baseball guy at all, and I'll say that just because I don't want to pretend like I'm talking about something I don't know what I'm talking about. But what's very interesting to me is that after all was said and done with Mickey Mantle, you know, after all the alcoholism and how he just ravaged his body, and after that liver transplant, and came out and just basically said, look, kids, don't live like I lived. But we've had discussions about steroids before, and there's definitely a lot of people have different feelings about this. Some people think, why not steroids? Dan Pashman is here. What does this mean to you, baseball fan?
Well, it's definitely big news for even a casual baseball fan. I mean, Rafael Palmiro.
Would you quit calling me a girl? Go ahead.
I mean, I have seen you throw a ball, man. I mean, no.
You have not seen me throw a ball, my friend. And they used to call me Hank Marin when I played.
I thought they called you Marshmallow Marin.
Well, this is how I got out of the
marshmallow skills.
Yeah, that was the thing. Is they called me Hank Marin because I used to hit home runs and stick ball, and that means I didn't have to run very fast around the bases, did I? I'd hit a home run. He'd go Marshmallow. Right. All right, that was my coach when I was in fourth grade. Right. Anyways, go ahead.
It's big news. This guy, Rafael Palmiro, is a borderline Hall of Famer. I mean, okay. Not only did he lie to Congress just a few months ago, who's seen, but this guy is a huge player. And if you look at his numbers, he put up extraordinarily good numbers later on in his career when obviously most players start to decline. This guy just kept on going almost to an unnatural point.
Oh, wait, Dan. Yeah.
He's 40 years old, by the way.
I'm sorry, but Rafael Palmiro, he has 3,000 hits and 500 home runs. He's a guaranteed Hall of Famer if he did not test positive for
steroids. So this
That's
ruins.
That's probably true.
This ruins it?
Pretty much.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, Chris. What do you think? I mean, do you think that this is good, you know, 5 or 6 years from now when he's retired, do you think it's going to stop him from getting into the Hall?
I think before this, he was a first ballot Hall of Famer because only three other people are in the 3,000 hit club. Now,
yeah.
he might not even get on the third try.
Oh, man. See, they got to change. They have to have a steroids Hall of Fame.
yeah, that'll work. No, I mean, you got guys like Frank Robinson, who is still in baseball, guy for manager of the Washington Nationals, a guy who is in the Hall of Fame. He is saying that anyone who tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs should be denied admission to the Hall because guys like him, guys like Hank Aaron, did it the right way.
So you're saying that it casts a shadow on their entire career because it's not clear how many times he was using it or when he was using it?
Exactly.
That's right.
This stuff, I really wonder, in the dialogue about sports in 10 years from now, are they going to be saying, like, God, can you remember when we couldn't use these things? Man, it's so much more exciting to go to the ballpark now. Do you think that's going to happen?
I think it's going to be really, I really honestly don't know. I mean, but what's going to have to happen, Mark? You know, they've been building these baseball stadiums smaller and smaller.
They're going
to
make
the wall is closer and closer. Meanwhile, the guys are getting bigger and bigger. They're going to have to make the field a mile long if they start making steroids legal.
You just see these guys, what, these 9-foot players are going, ah!
He hits balls.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the other thing it does, it really casts doubt on a lot of other guys. Jason Giambi, who at one point admitted having used, he's having a great month hitting all kinds of home runs. Now people are wondering if he's using steroids.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk about hybrid cars and how Congress sort of tricked us into thinking with this new energy bill that we're going to get some tax breaks, but it's not as easy as all that. 57 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, 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 blah.
It's 6 past the hour. Good morning. It's Tuesday. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. I am Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Air America Radio's radio program that you're listening to. That's the network. That's the station, LIB, here in New York. How are you? We'll be broadcasting live from the legendary CBGB's in Manhattan this Friday.
Yeah.
We have little Steven Van Zandt from the E Street Band and the Sopranos. He's scheduled to appear. Comedian Jim Gaffigan. We're going to have some live rock music from the in-house band over there. It's going to be playing flying us in and out of breaks.
Oh, really? They got an in-house band?
They kind of do, yeah.
Whoa.
Got some free coffee and some giveaways. That's Friday morning at CBGB's. That's the corner of Bowery and Bleecker here in New York City from 6 to 9 a.m. I will be performing the following night on Saturday, the 6th, at Giggles Comedy Club in Seattle for two shows. If you'd like to go to that, go to giggles comedy club.com for tickets, and you can come down and hang out. So it's going to be hot in New York today, man.
Hot and humid.
I just saw the news. It's like 94 degrees with humidity. Dude, it's draining, man. It's draining. We had a couple of days reprieve, but I knew it when I got up this morning. I felt it coming down. It's almost like a pressure cooker with the humidity. I mean, I like the dry heat. You know what I'm saying, right?
God, it's moving day. Oh, no.
And you got to move in this humidity, but you're not doing it on your own. You're just going to watch guys, and you're going to say, no, wrong room. Wrong room.
No, that's my stash. Put it over here.
Yeah, yeah. Tell that cute little story you just told off mic there about your daughter in the new house when you went over there.
Oh, Vivica, my daughter, who's 8 years old, yesterday went and sat for 20 seconds on the floor of each room in our new house.
She was spreading out the good karma through
spreading
the house.
Spreading love throughout feng shui.
You're gonna have to get yourself one of them sage sticks and do that that thing. What do they call that thing? I forgot what it's called. There's this thing. It's sort of a hippie kind of witchy kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Wiccan.
You get the big sage thing. It's a big thing of wrapped sage plant, and you set it on fire, and then you blow it out, and you smoke out all the rooms, and it's supposed to dissipate all of the badness.
I also burned down my new house.
There you go. That'd be hilarious. Why did I forget what it was called? I've done it because, I've gone out. My wife has some hippie background, and I think she's the one that turned me onto it. Let's get into a little news. John Bolton, evading the constitutional requirements of Senate consent, again, with a different thing other than a war. Bush went ahead and installed John Bolton as ambassador to the UN yesterday. This ended the five-month stalemate between the White House and a sustained filibuster by both Republicans and Democrats, and was true to character for a president that has no respect for the Constitution and is tyrannical in his actions when he doesn't get what he wants.
You know, the question people ought to be asking themselves now is how much damage can this clown do between now and January 2007? We could find ourselves as a country isolated from the rest of the world on account of this guy's mouth.
Just screaming. This guy, it's just him screaming.
Yeah. I mean, people don't understand exactly what Bush did here. He essentially told the rest of the world, hey, up yours. This is my guy. He needs to be paid back. My boy Cheney said he helped us out in 2000 down in Florida, and we need to pay his monkey behind back, and that's why he's going to the U.S.
Yeah, these guys, I'll tell you, the Republicans always pay back their criminals, that's for sure. For the first time ever, NASA will send an astronaut out of the shuttle to remove filler material that is protruding out from heat-resistant tiles on the underbelly of the Discovery. This has never been done before, the in-space repair number. Gap fillers, which need to be repaired, are the thin fabric stiffened with a ceramic material and used to plug gaps between the tiles that they've had a lot of trouble with in the past. One of these types of gap fillers keeps tiles from vibrating against each other and has no purpose, apparently, for reentry. And the other is designed to prevent repeated overheating of a gap between two tiles. That's important because I think that's what caused some of the trouble before.
Yeah, that is what caused some
if
of the
you,
trouble.
They got to fix it. If he can't pull these things loose, this is Steve Robinson, the astronaut, who's been, I don't know how they picked him, but I bet you I just see it. It's like, someone's got to go out there. I'm not going, man. No, you got to go, Steve. You're the best one.
You're the best guy. You're the guy. You're the man.
You're the only guy that knows how to work the hacksaw.
Was that in 2001 where they sent that guy out and they played the Blue Danube?
Yeah. Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I keep hearing, the Blue Danube, every time I hear this story.
Open the pod bay doors. So if he can't pull them loose, he's got to use a supersonic space hacksaw to cut them off and make them flush. So I hope that goes off well. I believe it will. They seem to be confident. They've never done this before, but they have been practicing.
Now, there's a modicum of danger in this, for real.
Of course.
In terms of reentering the Earth's atmosphere. I don't mean about the repair. I'm talking about what happens if this heat shield doesn't stay on right.
I'm just thinking about that. Let me get this straight. The guy's going out in space. He's going to be dangled by a robotic arm that's maneuvering him under the shuttle in space. There's a modicum of problems that could happen.
I'm talking about the reentry. The outside thing is one thing, but getting back inside the Earth's atmosphere, and I think NASA has kind of downplayed the actual danger to the astronauts if something slips up here.
Yeah, they actually said that neither one of these repairs is essential for landing. But what else are they going to say? Dude, man, I hope this works out.
Yeah, well, here's one guy saying, given the large degree of uncertainty, life could be normal during entry or some bad things could happen.
That was a guy from NASA?
Yes!
Oh, man. So hang on to your seats, folks, and stay tuned.
Yeah.
That's horrendous. I hope that the astronauts aren't getting cable, or aren't picking that stuff up, aren't reading the news. There's a modicum of, what did you say? A modicum of danger.
Danger.
In being dangled by a robotic arm. That wasn't the problem, though. No, not that, Riley says. The landing.
The landing. This is Wayne Hale, the deputy shuttle program manager, saying bad things could happen.
Yeah, Mr. Hale, can you tell us what to expect in landing? Oh, man. Who the hell knows, man? This could go either way. That's horrendous.
Man.
All right. In the energy bill that has not been signed, the supposed bone it throws to consumers for doing the right thing and buying a hybrid car is a little shady. It's not shady. It's convoluted, and it doesn't really work out to much. It comes in the form of a disappearing tax credit, Riley.
Yeah, it does. And what this does is penalize the companies, the automakers, who are furthest along in developing hybrid car technology. It says that the tax cut disappears as these companies sell more than 60,000 hybrid vehicles. Well, the two companies that are closest to 60,000 are Toyota and Honda. Ford and GM, on the other hand, are averaging about 20,000 vehicles, so that tax cut is going to last them an awful lot longer. This cuts at me because I was thinking about getting a hybrid car.
Yeah, my wife wants one. She either wants a hybrid car or a Scion, but I don't know how much gas they really save in the long run. I know it's a good thing, but I think the smaller... I got a 6-cylinder Toyota that I bought used, and that thing burns gas.
Well, I'll tell you what. The Honda, they have a Honda Accord hybrid now that gets something on the order of 50 miles to the gallon, which isn't bad.
The trick thing is here is that, like, if here's how it parses out, is that once an automaker makes 60,000, as you said, it has the remainder of that fiscal year and the following quarter in which buyers of its vehicles can receive a full tax credit.
Yeah.
But that goes away. During the two quarters after that, they're no longer eligible for the full credit, and they get 50%. All right, and then the two quarters after that, 25%. Now, this is only $250 to $3,400, which is a lot of money.
It's a decent credit.
Depending on the fuel efficiency, but depending on when you bought it and when the manufacturer made it, you might not get anything.
And remember, the most fuel efficient are the ones that have the most hybrids out now.
Yeah, they're already made. So, you know, it's devious is what this is, and it was slipped into the energy bill. You know, Riley, I'll tell you something. Sometimes it's not easy being a liberal. You know, we all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time. But when we need to unburden ourselves, my friends, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take it, by the way, a couple people call it, it's called smudging. Smudging is when you take the stage. Yes. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, yeah, I...
Come on, spit it out.
Well, you know how confessions are supposed to be embarrassing and stuff?
Well, yeah, that's why I'm here.
Well, this is embarrassing and stuff. I want a Corvette, Riley.
Oh, my son.
I know, all right? I saw one, then I got this mental picture. It's me. I'm driving my Corvette. It's black. It's fast. And I loved it.
Well, Mark, this isn't all that unusual. Most men have a similar car fantasy at some point in their lives. But that point usually comes around puberty.
I know, but that didn't happen to me.
Puberty?
No, the Corvette thing, Riley. I always thought the car thing was just for jocks and gearheads, you know, guys that I hated, guys that would sit there in study hall and look at brochures for stereo equipment.
So you missed it, and now you're over 40.
And I want the vet, dude. I want the vet. I want the big house. I want the maid. I want the fancy suits. I want a pool, perfect hair. You know what? I think I'm going through my Dynasty Falcon Crest period, Riley.
Good Lord. I think I have your penance. I want you to lease a new Corvette, Mark.
A black one?
The one you want.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you so much, Brother Riley. That's terrific.
Wait.
What?
But you have to live in it, sleep in it, eat in it. And I want you to put a big sign on the back of it that says, I'm Mark Maron from Air America Radio, and this is my awesome Corvette.
Oh, the sign? That part's kind of killing it for me.
Exactly, Knight Rider. Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Riley. It's ironic that I have that confession after the hybrid discussion.
a vet or a Prius.
Okay. If you want to call in, 866-303-2270 is the number if you have something to confess. It looks like we've got a call from Kim in New Jersey. Kim, how are you? What's up, Kim?
Oh, I was just calling to tell you that the Prius actually does save a lot of gas.
It does.
It really does, and it's a great car.
And I
do not work for the company at all.
That is, well, no, I've heard this from a lot of people, the Toyota Prius. Yeah, I mean, we were going to get a Toyota Scion, but, you know, the Prius, you say it's worthwhile, because I love Toyotas.
The Scion? Okay.
Yeah, it is made by Toyota.
It's kind of just a weird-looking car. Although you were talking about a Corvette. So.
My wife wants a Scion. Of course, I can't have a car. Now I want a Corvette. But thanks for your call, Kim.
All
right, take care.
I thought that was my wife.
866-303-2270 is the number if you want to confess. I have confessed my sin that I know I need a hybrid, but I want a vet. 17 past the hour. Looking forward to your confessions. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. Call us at 866-303-2270.
Where you take everyone's suffering and turn it into gold.
That's 866-303-2270.
All right. What are you getting so steamed up about?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Two past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We'll be broadcasting live this Friday from the legendary CBGB's Rock Club in Manhattan. Little Steven Van Zandt from the East Street Band and the Sopranos is scheduled to appear, plus comedian Jim Gaffigan. We have some live rock music, free coffee. That's at Bowery and Bleecker, CBGB's, this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. In just a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Mark Benjamin, national correspondent for Salon.com, who posed as a gay man and underwent reparative therapy with a Christian therapist who tried to cure him of his homosexuality. This is going to be an interesting interview, so you want to hang around for that. We're taking confessions at 866-303-2270. Also, I've been corrected by a Native American that smudging, which I didn't know the name of, which is where you burn the sage in the different rooms of your apartment to cleanse it of things unseen, is actually a Native American tradition, and I sort of wrote it off as kind of witchy hippie stuff, and I apologize to whoever I might have offended by not knowing exactly the source of smudging. Okay, let's start with these confessions. Kevin in Long Island, what is your sin?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hey.
Mark and Mark.
Yeah.
I collect classic cars,
mm-hmm.
and I drive them,
mm-hmm.
and they get about 12 miles a gallon,
mm-hmm.
and I restore them, and I enjoy them.
Okay.
And they pump out a lot of smoke, and they're not very good for the environment,
but
I don't want to give them up.
Yeah, how often do you drive them?
As often as possible.
Wow, so this is one of those situations where you got these... which is the biggest gas eater you have there, Kevin?
Probably the 1957 Studebaker Silverhawk.
Here's what I see for you and your penance, is that you take out your 1957 Studebaker Silverhawk, and you've got to give some people a ride to work. You got to fill that car up. You have to make yourself available in your area to pick people up and almost like a private Studebaker taxi service.
One-man carpool.
For a week. How do you like that?
You know, that's the penance I can do.
Okay, and you know what? I bet you people would be excited to ride in the Studebaker.
Sure,
I think
the Studebaker.
Yeah, and I think by doing that, you will help the environment, you will help people get to work, and you will give people an exciting ride that they never thought they would have.
Well... Then I think I have a penance.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. I'm glad we could help, Kevin. You bet.
Wow, a 57 Studebaker. I've heard of 57 Chevys. I didn't know people collected Studebakers.
Yes, Peter is that who we're talking to now? Hello, Peter in New Jersey. What's on your mind?
Hey, Peter.
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Listened to you guys a long time, first time I got on the air. I just wanted to tell you, Mark.
Yeah.
If you are thinking of getting a Scion, I own a Scion.
Yeah.
The XB, those boxes.
Yeah.
They're like little wagons.
Yeah.
The great thing about them, about Scion, is this.
Yeah.
You can custom make it. So if you go online, they have their own website, you can custom make it, which could take care of your Corvette fetish.
Yeah. you mean I can make it into a Corvette?
Well, not exactly, but you can custom make it. You know, you can put in, like, stereo system. It's got an MP3 player. It's got a nice four cylinder engine.
Yeah.
And it's also a wagon, so you can seat 4 to 5 people.
Okay.
And it gets about 35 miles a gallon on the highway.
I think the big question is, given that my wife wants it, will it make my wife love me still?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, well, thanks, Peter. Thanks for the information.
He didn't even have to come up with a sin.
Let's take a sin. Rick in Fort Lauderdale, quickly, what's your sin, my friend?
Yeah. I was watching My Liberal Confession. I was watching Christian TV. They were talking about dinosaurs were in the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
I grew up on the Flintstones. I said, hey, that makes a lot of sense. George Bush and Rick Santorum believe it. It must be true. And they really believe that dinosaurs were in the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, they must have been responsible for eating Adam and Eve. Is that how they... So you're saying you were believing it?
No. I was laughing. They really believe it. If you search for dinosaurs in the Garden of Eden on the Internet, you get a million Christian websites. And George Bush really believes, and Rick Santorum, they're connected to these people.
All right. Well, I think you ought to, maybe you should write Santorum or something.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
All right.
What was that? That wasn't a sin. Dinosaurs in the Garden of Eden. Is that what happened? Mark Benjamin, national correspondent for Salon.com, who posed as a gay man and underwent reparative therapy with a Christian therapist, tying into the dinosaurs in the Garden of Eden. The Christians also believe that you can cure homosexuality. What the? All right. So anyways, this guy went undercover as a gay man to be cured. We're going to talk to him in a few minutes. And Peter with the call for the sign. People love their cars.
Yeah.
And I'm glad. He said it gets 35 miles to the gallon.
So does my Honda.
Yeah. Well, I got a Honda, too. I like Hondas. I got a 93 Honda out there that we're going to trade in for this thing, I think.
There you go.
So we're going to talk about curing homosexuality in just a second.
You sure?
Yeah. 27 past the hour, America Radio's Morning Citizen program. You're listening to Mark and Mark.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hours, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. In a few minutes, you heard about the Mariana Islands. That's where Tom DeLay got all those people to work for a nickel a day to manufacture clothes for out of sweatshops. Well, they figured out a new way to exploit people of that region. Send them to war.
Yep.
We'll get into that in a minute. Right now, is it possible to be an ex-gay? Is it? The religious right thinks so. A number of organizations have popped up around the country offering courses in reparative therapy, a course that promises to rid gays of their homosexuality. Well, our next guest spent some time in reparative therapy. His four-part investigation on the ways in which the religious right strives to de-gay homosexuals can be found at Salon.com. Please welcome Mark Benjamin, national correspondent for Salon Magazine, to the show. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First things first, Mark, are you gay and were you actually seeking a sexual conversion?
No, I'm not gay, but I'm certainly interested in the religious right.
Yeah, as we are too, the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade, as I call them. What kind of reparative therapy did you have to undergo? What was the setup for this?
Well, the setup was that I started working on a story about how the religious right feels about homosexuality, which I think is pretty well known. And I started interviewing people who had been through this.
Uh-huh.
And I was shocked at how many were, frankly, suicidal.
After they went through it.
Yes, which meant that the therapy was obviously different than advertised. I mean, it's advertised as this compassionate thing. And I thought that there's such a difference here, I'm going to enroll myself.
So you mean it's not advertised as either you won't be gay anymore or you'll kill yourself?
Correct. It's emphasized as, we welcome gay people as, we're compassionate Christians.
Right.
If people want to change, we have a responsibility to help them find their way to God and so on and so forth. So I enrolled under a fake name.
And what kind of therapy did you get?
The therapy sort of works on a spectrum. There's different methods that different groups employ, all of which I would add are at best frowned upon and in some cases met with outrage by the modern mental health establishment. I did two kinds. One was sort of what you referred to as reparative therapy, which is where you sit on a couch and there's a guy there who's a counselor who essentially blames it all on your dad. I mean, I'm being flip, but that's basically how it works. It was a relationship with your father. Although he brought up some other things. It could have been poor eye-hand coordination. It could have been I lacked confidence, and so I wanted to have sex with other men who were confident. I also went to another kind of therapy, which was sort of the other end of the spectrum of groups that do this, which is just basically pray harder. They didn't bother with my daddy. They just worried about whether or not I was close enough to God. And in that, I was told to concentrate my homosexual desires on Jesus Christ.
Really? So I would assume would cross some wires for some, depending on how they see Jesus.
It was a little. It struck me as a tad kinky. I'm trying not to be flip, if you spend any time with gay people, it's very difficult to listen to this stuff and take it frankly too seriously.
Well, you know, who was this first therapist you went to? Was he like an analyst? Was he a doctor?
Actually, he's a licensed clinical social worker, which. When we published the stories, raised a lot of outrage among licensed clinical social workers because, you know, groups like the American Psychiatric Association, the American Psychological Association, and the group of the National Group of Social Workers believe that efforts to change gay people into straight people, like this guy was employing, are not only wrong but dangerous. And in fact, they say that it can drive people to suicide. And the reason why it drives people to suicide is because if you are a serious Christian and you believe in God and you go into a therapy where you're told that you can't be the way that you are, you can't be a good Christian and be the way that you are, it's like being trapped in a box.
And this guy's name was Barry Levy?
Yeah.
How does a guy named Barry Levy get off, you know, giving, trying to fix homosexuals for the Christian right? I mean, am I wrong? Barry Levy, that can't be a Christian name.
It sure doesn't sound like it. I did not get into his religious beliefs.
Okay, all right.
Although he did tell me, I mean, we did have a discussion about the Bible, and he made it very clear that my homosexuality was not something God appreciated.
Mark Benjamin, some of the biggest poster people for this reparative therapy are people who say they were cured by it. People who say they were gay once or you know, lived a gay lifestyle, whatever, and that they were, quote, cured, unquote, by this. And it seems as though those are the folks that they put out there as the visible face of reparative therapy. You talked to some of them. What impression did you get of them?
Well, one of the things that I found about the stories, you can find these people, these ex-gays. It is very, very hard to find ex-gays who will tell you how wonderful this therapy is, who are not on the payroll of what they call these ex-gay ministries, these groups that go out and do this stuff. I can't find these people walking down the street. I can find them when they're on the payroll of Focus on the Family or one of these ex-gay ministries. Conversely, I found plenty of people. It was very, very easy for me to find, you know, the gay guy next door who went through this therapy and said it really hurt him, which I don't think was a weakness in my reporting. I just think it's very hard to find these ex-gays.
Now, the other thing that certainly I got from looking at your pieces is that some of the people that have gone through this process, specifically the Reverend J. Grace Harley, had other problems or had problems in her life other than being a lesbian. Apparently, you know, she was getting high all the time and that sort of thing. Does this cure, does this reparative therapy work differently when people are also trying to cure other ills in their life?
Yes. I mean, one of the things you'll find when you start looking into this is you will find people drawn to this therapy who have lots and lots of problems. Yes. People with, you know, sexual addictions, drug addictions, really living unhealthy lifestyles, you know, whether they were gay or straight. They just happened to be gay at the same time. And you could make the argument that, you know, living a lifestyle by the tenets of Christianity really helps these people. I mean, they're not, you know, sleeping with hundreds of people and they're not, you know, injecting heroin anymore. And that's great. A critic would say that, but in order to get rid of those other vices, they also have to give up their sexuality while they go through this therapy.
So this is sort of a twisting of cognitive therapy and recovery ideas that they make a Christian agenda. I mean, these kind of things you know, drug addiction and certainly sex addiction and compulsive behavior can be dealt with in a cognitive way.
Sure. I mean, it's sort of like a grab bag of, you know, Freudian right. psychotherapy and a bunch of other stuff. Some of the groups just concentrate, I know it sounds crazy, but concentrate on just getting people to act less gay, they believe. I mean, you're not allowed to wear Abercrombie and Fitch, and you're not allowed to speak in a feminine tone. I'm not kidding, but it's
a Abercrombie and Fitch?
Why Abercrombie and Fitch? How about, you know, feather boas and...
Yeah, really.
They're really against Abercrombie and Fitch and Calvin Klein. I have to say, I didn't ask why, but I'm not really...
I think Abercrombie and Fitch once used put out a catalog that the Christian right was very pissed off about because it was just too sexy.
It could be.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it seems from that, you know, somebody who knows anything about psychotherapy or so on and so forth might think that this stuff is silly, but the reason why we did this series of stories in the first place is that this definition of what homosexuality is, which is that it's basically a sickness or a very, you know, an unhealthy lifestyle, is the definition that is adopted by the groups that are going around trying to change the Constitution of the United States or trying to change sex ed in public schools. They're doing it here in Montgomery County, Maryland.
Yeah.
They're doing things across the country. I mean, this is the foundation of that agenda.
Yeah, and also, it's interesting to note, I think you might have in your piece, that they changed this. I mean, this was a common thought in the 50s, 40s and 50s about homosexuality, but there was a fight within the psychiatric community to redefine it.
That's right. In 1973, the American Psychiatric Association, which are the guys who literally write the book on what's a problem and what's not a problem, took homosexuality out of what's called the DSM, which is the book of what's problems. Homosexuality is not in there.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why they did that, they say, is because the science shows that there's nothing wrong with being homosexual. I mean, for example, when you show gay people, you know, ink blots and straight people ink blots, everything comes out the same. There's nothing wrong inherently in just being gay, and so they took it out. Basically, what we have here is a group of people who have decided that decision is wrong. A critic would say the reason why they believe the decision to take it out, had to be wrong, is because it undercuts their whole agenda. You know, in other words, you can't let gay people not have civil unions if there's nothing wrong with being gay.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, did you get a sense that there were people who went through this therapy who argued the point that you could not be gay and Christian at the same time? And if so, how did the therapy deal with that? If somebody came and said, well, look, I'm gay, I believe I'm a good Christian, I'm living a particular life, how did they break down that kind of resistance?
The way they break down that kind of resistance is they believe nobody is naturally gay. It's a problem. In other words, they believe it is not possible that people are born gay, otherwise God would be making sinners. They believe that being gay is an unhealthy lifestyle that people have adopted for other reasons, you know, to fulfill a need that their daddy didn't, you know, fulfill for them. In other words, if you could just figure out what that problem is deep down in your personality and fix it, you won't be gay anymore, because of course God didn't make gays. That's how they get around it.
It's interesting that this is one of the few areas that the Christian fanatics actually, you know, encourage people into therapeutic situations. I mean, it seems that therapy and psychology in and of itself is something that doesn't really gel with their agenda.
Well, that's right. It's interesting. We keep using the word therapy because it is therapy. And one of the other things that I don't think has been touched on very much is that a lot of this stuff is happening in totally unregulated settings. I mean, these facilities and these people, in most cases, they're not licensed by anybody. Actually, the New York Times just wrote an article the other day about a facility, and I mentioned it too in my series, in Memphis, Tennessee, that is taking kids against their will. I mean, their parents are sticking them in an inpatient facility to turn them into straight people. There's no license for this facility.
Right, the way they just call themselves, like, the Gay Busters?
Well, they sort of say that they're, you know, it's religious, you know, work of some kind. But certainly a critic would say that when you're tinkering around in people's brains with the fundamentals of sexuality, that's therapy, and it should be regulated. The reason why, a critic would say, it's not regulated or licensed is because the modern mental health professions think this is bunk.
Well, how come they haven't taken legal action against these groups?
In some cases, they are. In fact, in the case in Tennessee, now the state is investigating that facility. The other reason is that it takes people to complain. People have to complain to the authorities.
Right. Before we go, Mark, what was the most a profound or enlightening or funny moment that you had during your the attempts to homosexualize you.
I think the two things that in two of my sessions, being told that my poor eye-hand coordination may have been correlated with my homosexual feelings mm-hmm. was certainly something that startled me. And in a second session, yes, when I was told that if I just concentrated my homosexual attractions on Jesus Christ, that would take care of it. I think those are really the most poignant moments.
All right, Mark Benjamin, national correspondent for Swan Magazine. Thanks a lot for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
That was great.
That was strike three. You're gay?
Oh, I just
I don't understand.
You know, why can't they just leave people alone? It's 47 past the hour. It's Air America Radio. We'll be back to talk about. The Army has gone off into the American territories, Samoa, Micronesia, is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm.
The Mariana Islands, which, of course, was where Tom DeLay kind of used his deregulating, free market, privatizing model for the world. They're now taking those same people that made a nickel a day and trying to get them into uniform. What are the ethics of that, Riley? We'll talk about that in a second, 47 past the hour.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Fifty-two past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're going to talk about Army recruiting in the American territories, Samoa, Micronesia.
Bad business.
Yes, the Mariana Islands. In just a second, we got a call here though from Rob in Manhattan, who listened to our discussion with Mark Benjamin about deprogramming homosexuals. What's on your mind, Rob? What do you know about it?
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys, for taking my call. I just want to preface this very quickly. You know, I love both my parents. My father was never cold and distant to me or any of those things. Uh-huh. I don't know what happened to me, but I'm still gay. But that's besides the point. But I read just recently, by the way, I've been looking at testimonials about these ex-gay men from the ministries and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Quite interesting. But what I read recently, what some gay person did was allowed into one of these big organizations.
Yeah.
And some of the things that they were told, supposedly from the physical point of view of this, was telling the guys, well, if you thought you were going to marry a woman within a year or so, you had to be careful not to masturbate for about a year.
Yeah.
Because you might have images about men.
Okay.
Wow. So in other words, if you waited a year and you didn't do that, by that time you'd F anything.
Oh, my God.
You know, yeah.
You know what I mean? And
yeah,
the other thing is, and all this other thing your friend was talking about, too, about the self-hatred, the self-loathing, it all went back to father, hunger, mm-hmm. your daddy, you know, all these old prehistoric cliches about homosexuals. But then there was one other thing. They also, I can't remember what the other thing was.
About the gym.
Oh, yeah,
working out.
That they said that you had to kind of make your body somewhat harder. They said it didn't have to be an Adonis's body. So then what would happen is it would be in contrast to the softer, flabbier, or whatever, of a woman's anatomy, and you would get used to it because your body was a little harder. Don't ask me.
So wait, are these instructions on how to be gay, or...
Well, exactly. Because, you know, what I'm saying is, yeah, you work yourself out. You want another hard body. I don't know.
Thanks a lot,
there
Rob. Take care.
Scary.
Hey, man.
Yeah, what?
Sorry to bother you, but that creepy guy that threatens you is on line one.
Oh, man. I don't know, man. This guy. All right, you know what? I'm not going to let him walk all over me. Put him through, and we'll deal with it. What do you want, man?
Hello, Mark.
Yes, hello. What? What do you want?
I want to shake you up, Mark. I want to be the one you fear, the one that keeps you up at night.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Hey, is there like a clicking on the line? You keep breaking up.
No, not on my end.
So you can hear me, Mark?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Weird. Let me call you back on my landline.
All right, I guess.
Okay, call you right back.
Okay.
Okay, just a sec.
Right.
Okay, I'm hanging up now. Call you back.
What is that? What is wrong with this guy?
Hey, you know what?
What?
He's actually back.
What? Ooh. Hello?
Hello, Mark. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Good. Very good, Mark.
Let's get to the point here, okay, pal?
Oh, no, no, Mark. That's your mistake. You don't tell me what to do. I call the shots here.
Okay, then call one.
Slow down, Mark. Tell me, what did you do this weekend, comedy boy?
You know what I did? I did sets at the Improv in Midtown. You remember you threatened to show up, remember?
I was there, Mark.
Well, terrific.
I'll be there every night. Which reminds me, doesn't the Improv have passes for that kind of thing? If I was to come every night, you know, free passes.
Wait a minute, are you asking me to get you in for free so you can stalk and threaten me?
Well, it's just that the two-drink thing can get a little pricey, Mark. If I stay for all three sets, that's six drinks.
You were there for all three sets?
Yes, Mark. I'm watching you.
Oh, no.
I thought you kind of lost the crowd during your second set. Tell me, where are you going to be performing this weekend?
Yeah, you'll find out.
Yes, I will, Mark. I'll be there. And I'm going to bring someone with me this time. Someone very special. They'll be watching you, too.
Great. So there are more of you. Now, who are you bringing?
Actually, it's my sister. She's visiting from out of town, and I want to take her out. I figured I could kill two birds with one stone.
So you're gonna stalk me, and you're going to bring your sister with you?
Yes, Mark. Oh, and she's from Baltimore, Mark. So if you could do a couple of jokes about Baltimore, Mark, I'd really appreciate it.
What kind of stalker are you anyways?
That's for me to know and you to find out.
Oh, okay, that's mature.
Mark, I have a riddle for you. What did the Italian say to the Jew in the lifeboat?
I don't know. What did the Italian say to the Jew in the lifeboat? Who is that guy? All right, we got to go. We're going to come back in just a second. We're going to talk about Army recruiting in Samoa and the Mariana Islands. Very devious stuff. Stay with us. 57 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yo!
You having a good Tuesday there? Goliath number one just came in with the take from Starbucks here. Just gave Riley, this is going to be interesting to watch Riley drink a double shot iced can of coffee.
Yeah, man, double shot espresso.
Going to watch your Riley head start spinning around. La 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 la. And who am
well,
I drink
strong coffee in the morning anyway, but I didn't bring any to work with me.
But dude, I've got the triple shot soy latte.
Soy latte espresso?
Oh man, here we go, Riley. Woohoo! All right, we'll be broadcasting live from legendary CBGB's in Manhattan this Friday. We have little Steven Van Zandt from the E Street Band and the Sopranos is scheduled to appear. Comedian Jim Gaffigan is going to be there. Very funny guy. We got some live rock music, free coffee, a bunch of giveaways. It's Friday morning at CBGB's. I didn't even drink the coffee yet. I can't talk. CBGB's, that's down at the corner of Bowery and Bleecker. I will be at Giggles Comedy Club in Seattle the following night on Saturday, August 6th for two shows. You can go to GigglesComedyClub.com for ticket info. That's all happening. Riley's moving later today, so maybe you need that double shot.
Yeah.
Looks like it's going to be a really hot day here in New York City. The humidity is going to be nasty. It's going to be in the 90s, so drink lots of water and don't overexert yourself because that, you know, that heat stroke can slip right in on you. You don't even know it's happening until all of a sudden you're like, where am I? Is it my birthday? And you fall down.
Yeah.
That's how that happens. Chris, what are you thinking about? Your family? Had a big long conversation with Kalo, the Costco ho, on the break about how he wishes his family was more airworthy. And then he went on to tell us about his horrendous family. Yeah. And it was pretty brutal. And I think it is pretty airworthy. Talk about...
go ahead. Brutalize your family, Chris.
Your dad's out in Arizona, right?
Yes, he's out in Arizona. He wants me to come visit him when I take my vacation in a couple of weeks.
And you're going to Rome, though, aren't you?
No, I'm going to Rome in November.
Are you going to go to Arizona?
No, I don't think so.
Good for you.
One thing, it's really hot there. Well, yeah. I'm using that as an excuse. And secondly, I hate his wife.
That's like this.
We're listening on our Phoenix affiliate.
No. Yeah, one thing, it's really hot there, and the other thing is I don't want to go. Yeah. Really?
No, I really hate her. She knows I hate her. She hates me, and it's great. Like, the only reason why you moved out there is to get me away from him. Like, she wants all power over my father.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's a
horrendous.
Bitch.
Oh, okay.
She's just
right.
Awful. And, you know, and my father was actually cheating on my wife.
On
my mother with
Ooh.
This woman, and then he later married this skank, and of course he had to move away, move 3,000 miles away from me.
Wow, yeah, this is
don't hold back, Chris.
Yeah, yeah, I like the Freudian slip on the mother wife thing. I've done that myself, but I understand. There's an Oedipal struggle at hand, and I think there's only one thing to do is go out to Phoenix and fight this out, man.
Yeah. No, trust
Throw
me.
Throw some hands.
We've been shouting at each other. My dad's wife and I have had some great yelling match. I mean, my dad's wife actually screaming to me, "You are a effing a-hole," to my face. And me not even retaliating, looking at my father, I'm like, "Dad, nothing?
Yeah.
You got nothing?"
Like, wow.
I live with you for, 22 years, and this bitch is going to be in your life for 2 years, and you have nothing?
Boy. Wow, man, I'm glad you got this out.
My dad's a coward.
This stuff has been brewing. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go out there. We'll get a video camera. I think that we've got a pitch here. I'll go in. I'll produce, and it'll be a reality show. It'd be sort of wrestling. It'd be like wrestling. What
See,
do you think?
My family's a little bit more interesting than the Pashmans, don't you think? Yeah.
It's like the dark Pashmans. It's like if everything went wrong in the world.
Bizarro Pashmans. Yeah.
So, all right, Chris. Well, I'm glad we opened that Pandora's box. Yeah, we're going to keep you in touch. We're going to keep on top of that.
Good talk.
All right, Riley. Army recruiters are busy traveling abroad. Pago Pago in the American Samoa. Yap in Micronesia. They are spreading out into Pacific Islands looking for high school graduates to enlist now that many Americans stateside have thought better of it. This is sort of a weird, scary, kind of exploitive thing. And here's why it happens. First Sergeant Olympio Magofna, a native of Saipan and overseer of recruitment for the Army from his base in Guam, says, quote, "You can't beat recruitment here in the Mariana Islands in Micronesia. In the States, they're really hurting, but over here, I can afford to play golf every other day," end quote. So let's go over some of the per capita incomes of the U.S. territories, Riley.
You're talking about American Samoa, $8,000 per capita. $12,500 in the Northern Marianas and $21,000 in Guam. But you know what, Mark?
Yeah.
This is not a new thing
okay.
in terms of military recruitment. Military recruiters have always sought out poor people, always sought out people who are making less than average wages.
Here in the States.
And see, the thing is, out there in the Mariana Islands, in those Western Pacific Islands, there's a tremendous sense of patriotism for America because they were occupied by the Japanese during the Second World War, and they see Americans as having liberated them from the Japanese, so they figure they owe something.
So the myth of the American liberators and the idea of patriotism is very, it's not a myth, but I mean, it's something that's in the culture, and it's deeply in the culture, but there's also the idea that, look, the Army...
There's no money anywhere on any of these islands.
Exactly. The only money was in, making pants and clothes to for Walmart at the behest of Tom DeLay and his cronies. The Mariana Islands were sort of elevated as this sort of free market paradise where they can completely exploit these workers in sweatshops and cut all these corners in terms of taxes and import export stuff. But this is the interesting thing is that the Army offers this. An Army minimum signing bonus is $5,000. Starting pay for a private first class is $17,472. Education benefits can be as much as $70,000. And of course, the one thing they're offering is the possibility to die in Iraq. Now, this is the thing that makes it most attractive. Despite what you're saying, the patriotism, which I think is part of it, the other part of it is if you're living someplace where the per capita income is $8,000 and you get a signing bonus for $5,000 and a guaranteed salary right off the bat of $17,000, that's big money.
Well, they also play, Mark, on something that is prevalent in adolescence in rural or isolated environments, and that is the desire to break out, the desire to break free, the desire to see other places and do other things. When you're talking about the Northern Mariana Islands, or you're talking about American Samoa and some of these other territories, you're talking about places where there is literally nothing for people who are, for example, just recent high school graduates. Nothing for them to do.
Yeah, and I think this, it says a lot about the situation that we have an overextended army, armed forces. We have recruiters here that are not making their number of recruits. And in a certain respect, I can understand that. We have a lot of angry parents here who are pissed off that recruiters are going into high school. Some of them are giving seminars. So now they're just taking it in a different direction. They're going to outsource on some level, even though these are American territories.
Yeah. And see, the thing is, in many of these places, you're seeing, for example, in Saipan, in Northern Mariana Islands, Japan Airlines, which is the carrier for one quarter of their tourist base, are ceasing operations in October.
Right.
That does not bode well for the economic future of a young person coming of age in that particular place. Now, of course, they got the sweatshops, the Tom DeLay-sponsored sweatshops, mm-hmm. where they could work for next to nothing. They could work in the sex shops, which Tom DeLay has also indirectly condoned. That they can do, probably maybe make a little bit more money, lose their souls.
Sure.
But other than that, or against that backdrop, the military seems to be a great option for me, even though they know that they could end up in Iraq and they could end up being shot.
Why not take the opportunity to go kill poor people from other countries?
Yeah.
So, look, here's another interesting thing that we're going to go up the pay scale here. The U.S. military has hired private contractors to do for about $1 billion just to dispose of Saddam Hussein's arsenal. That cash has fueled some fierce competition for experts in the field of, like, say, looking for explosives. And they're cutting from the very military that needs them but can't pay them what they could in the private sector. What's happening here is you got private contractors in Iraq doing the jobs that they learned how to do in the armed forces, and the armed forces can't keep these guys anymore. You got a guy, an experienced military explosive expert can earn about $250,000 a year or more working in the private sector for private companies. In the military, an enlisted guy with 10 years experience doing the same job can only make a paltry $46,000. So the better pay has caused an exodus of experts from the military to private contractors and caused some real tensions between the two.
Well, yeah, and you're talking now, Mark, about something that's happening across the board. The military is now, outsourcing a lot of the work that military personnel used to do, mail deliveries, clothes, translators, bodyguards, interrogators. This work is now being farmed out, and the private sector is paying better than the government.
Well, let me ask you a question, Riley. Is this a Rumsfeldian vision? Is this the future of the armed forces, an almost completely privatized army? Is this how the free market is going to evolve, that you're going to get a situation where most of the military contracts, maybe even some of the fighting in the future, is done by private companies paid for by the U.S. government?
Well, Rumsfeld envisions a very different American military, a leaner American military, which means fewer personnel. And he also envisions a military that is technologically driven and able to strike virtually at will anywhere on Earth without having to commit large numbers of troops.
Fewer military personnel, because if this is part of his vision, we're seeing, yes, that may be the case. They may have fewer military personnel, but they're certainly paying private companies, certainly companies
yes.
that have lobbied or affiliated with neocons, with the business interests that the government is aligned with, to pay the big money out of our taxpayer money, out of the government's allotment for these type of contracts.
Absolutely. And the problem here is you cannot deplete your military of its best experts. In the case of these explosives people, you can't replace them tomorrow.
Right.
These are people who developed that expertise over, in some cases, a generation of experience.
So,
you can't replace them
right.
tomorrow.
So what we're getting into is that we're creating a need. That
yep.
In the future, they're not going to have these guys to go to, and they're going to be forced to hire private companies in order to do the job that the military once did.
That's right. And they will be able to reward their friends among those private contractors, because that's going to be big money.
So the only people that are actually being enlisted in the military are cannon fodder from Samoa, from Micronesia, from the Mariana Islands.
Yeah, from other impoverished communities here in the United States as well.
Wow, man, that's a grim future for the military, and a completely different military than we're certainly used to seeing. Coming up in a moment, we've got Lawton Smalls on the phone. He's
going
to call from Planet Bush, so stay with us. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hey, this is Rob Zombie, and it says here, when I'm watching the sunrise after a long night of waking the dead and toasting nachos in the microwave, I listen to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Mm-hmm.
minutes past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Waiting on a call from Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls.
Yeah, yeah.
So that'll be coming up in a second. You know, on the front burner here, let's talk about the shuttle for a second and then move on into Rove. For the first time ever, NASA will send an astronaut out of the shuttle to remove a filler material that is protruding out from heat-resistant tiles on the Discovery's underbelly. During the spacewalk, astronaut Steve Robinson will be dangled from a robotic arm and maneuvered to the bottom of the shuttle with a hacksaw. Isn't that high-tech meeting low-tech?
I would think so. Well, you know what? If they could make the shuttle flip over upside down or whatever they did with it when it first went out there to try and correct this problem, which it didn't, obviously, then I guess they can send this guy out and he'll be reasonably safe.
Yeah, I think we've gotten pretty grim about this, but either he has to get rid of that stuff or he has to hack it off with the hacksaw. NASA is saying that either way it's going to be okay to land, but these tiles, this filler protects these tiles from two different things, and one of them happens to be preventing this fluctuation in heat that happens in reentry that might have caused some problems before. So we'll have to see with that. Now, in terms of Karl Rove, George Bush yesterday said, quote, "Karl's got my complete confidence. He's a valuable member of my team," end quote. These are the strongest words he said about this since the investigation became as public as has been lately. He's really distanced himself from Rove, and he's been saying, well, I can't say anything until they finish the investigation. This is a president who is caught in the middle of a fight between the neocon cabal that owns him and the CIA. Now, I don't want to get so much into specifics about that, but we do know that Robert Novak is the guy that first tipped Valerie Plame's name. Robert Novak has written a column in the Chicago Sun yesterday. This is the Chicago Sun-Times. This is his home paper yesterday. He's trying to say that he has journalistic integrity and he wants to clear some stuff up, Riley. But we know this guy is a Republican stooge that would do anything to be near power, and that this apology doesn't amount to much.
Well, it doesn't amount to much.
It's not an apology. I don't know why I'm calling it an apology. It's a clarification is what it is. He's trying to clarify something by making it more confusing.
Well, see, I think he's trying to clarify it more because I think he fears the possibility that somebody up in there perjured themselves in front of this grand jury. I think he's trying to clear the record. What he's doing is speaking to something that was in last Wednesday's Washington Post. Walter Pincus, who we talked about before in terms of this Rove thing, wrote a piece and quoted ex-CIA spokesman Bill Harlow as describing his testimony to the Fitzgerald grand jury. In that testimony, he said that Harlow told Novak, don't mention this woman's name.
Right.
Novak is trying to parse that out into saying, well, all he said was that there could be difficulties.
Well, her name should not be revealed. And
that's
apparently,
right.
Harlow was speaking in a way that a CIA the CIA representative could speak. He was being candid to a certain degree, but he couldn't say much more than what he said. And as opposed to just leave Valerie Plame out of it, Novak went right ahead and put her in because he was working for Libby and Cheney. He was doing Rove's dirty work. He was doing Libby's dirty work, and he was happy to do it.
Yeah, and his reason for doing it was, well, you could find is her name in Who's Who in America, which is absolutely one of the dodgiest things I have. And that's one of the terms my wife uses, a British term.
Dodgy on behalf of Novak. Because
absolutely.
He could have just left her out, but he was being part of this scam to make Joe Wilson look like he was emasculated because his wife was getting him a gig, to make her, you know, lose her confidentiality, her cover, and to humiliate him and teach him a lesson and also send a message to other critics. I mean, that's what Robert Novak was doing at the behest of Cheney, at the behest of Rove, and at the behest of Libby. He was helping them execute their demonic covert plan. Take this guy down, to take his wife down. And now it's become clear that Rove did not learn about the leak of Plame's identity, about Plame's identity from the press, but learned it from within the White House, probably through a memo that they had a couple of weeks before. And if he told the grand jury that he learned it from the press, there's a real good chance that he's going to get nailed for perjury.
And, you know, if Bob Novak is saying that he had to write this column to defend his integrity, he should not have bothered. He doesn't have any.
No, he doesn't have. He'll kiss up to any power. You told me you saw him in Washington.
I saw him at the White House dinner in 1996. Actually, it was the White House Christmas party when Bill Clinton was the president. Now, why would Bob Novak, who hated Clinton's guts, be at this party for the food.
Because he likes to be by power. He likes to.
There you go.
He likes to feel like the penis of people in power. That's what he likes. Hey, Lawton Smalls, I think, looks like he's on the line. So I haven't talked to him in a little while. Looking forward to that. So stay with us for that. It's 27 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
CNN's 25th anniversary, Morning Sedition is proud to present Great Moments in Journalism on CNN.
We're going to be talking about Pete here and the incredible things that penguins go through just to basically reproduce.
Yeah. Most people don't really realize what penguins go through. Just being able to raise their eggs and raise their young to adulthood, sometimes it's so difficult to just, you know.
I got to tell you, we've had a lot of movie stars and things here. No one's been as excited as to see the live penguins. Stay with us. It's going to be hard to top the penguins, but President Bush set to speak from the White House in a few minutes from now with leaders of five African nations.
This has been Great Moments in Journalism on CNN, brought to you by Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
35 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I wanted to thank Penelope in Wyoming again. She sent us another box of stuff, some great CDs. What was that band, Dan Pashman, that you told me about that's in there that I should listen to?
Neutral Milk Hotel.
Yeah, she sent all this stuff. Penelope sends the most thoughtful care packages. There's always little ceramic cowboy boots and little tchotchkes from Wyoming. And she sent a quinoa recipe.
Tchotchkes from Wyoming?
Yeah, she's a sweetheart.
She's
and
the
I,
best.
I forgot to... We didn't really get a thanks out to her. I don't know how long she listens to the show, but thank you for all that stuff. We're going to be at CBGB's this weekend with little Steven Van Zandt from the E Street Band and Jim Gaffigan, the comic. So come down 6 to 9, CBGB's down on Bowery and Bleecker here in New York City, and let's have some fun. Right now, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now on the phone, once again, is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. We're all just little stem cells swimming around in God's petri dish.
Whoa. So Lawton, Senator Bill Frist has come Senator Bill Frist has come out in favor of funding stem cell research. What do you think of that, buddy?
Best thing that could have ever happened, Mark.
What?
Stem cells are the future. You Democrats have stood in the way of science long enough. You don't understand the culture of life. Personally, I've always been for
this. That is not true. You
stem
have
cells.
Not. No, this is a total flip-flop, Lawton. 2 months ago, you were railing against him, man.
Hey, Dr. Bill Frist is a man of medicine and a man of God, and if he says stem cell research is okay, then sign me up. Let me be the first to say thank you, Dr. President Bill, two-terms mandate friend.
Whoa, No.
Right.
So all of a sudden you believe in medicine now? Howard Dean is also a doctor, and he's been saying this for years, my friend.
A witch doctor, maybe. Drunken heads, abortions, leeches. Leave that quack out of this. This is science fiction, okay?
I'm not letting you off the hook. Your precious Bush has opposed funding stem cell research for years. Now you're against him, huh?
Can't you see through his facade,
what?
Mark? The only reason President George W. two-terms mandate Bush is against stem cell research is modesty.
What are you talking about?
That's right, modesty. You know, because you know what the ultimate goal of stem cell research really is?
To cure diseases, replace organs?
No, Mark. The ultimate goal of stem cell research is to clone George W. Bush.
Oh, wait a minute.
Possibly thousands of times.
Oh, my God.
George W. two-terms mandate Bush could never publicly support such a plan because of the type of humble, self-effacing character that he is. But believe me, that's the plan. I've seen the memo.
Awful.
They're harvesting cells from him down in Crawford right now.
Oh, my God, no.
Every time he takes a spill on his bike, They put some more of his cells right there in the test tube.
Oh, my God. What, is that? What does that even mean? So the neocon death cult is going to clone Bush? This is horrifying.
Exciting, right?
No.
They're going to clone Strom Thurmond and Lee Atwater
no.
and J. Edgar Hoover and Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson.
No.
And Joseph McCarthy and Roy Cohn and Richard Nixon.
Oh, my
and
God.
And, of course, Ronald W. Two-Terms Mandate Reagan. That makes Nancy real happy, don't you think?
This is awful.
With our clones, we'll outnumber you liberals like 20-1. Then we'll have ourselves a truly conservative, God-fearing nation without the butt-cracked jeans and the hip-hop.
Oh, my God.
We'll lick this place into shape. What I promise you.
Horrifying vision, Rodden. Horrifying. I mean, while you're at it, why don't you just clone Jesus?
I like the way you...
Oh, no.
But we're still looking for DNA samples on him. Believe me, it's right at the top of our dance card. Can you imagine... President Jesus.
Yeah, it would actually be great. He's a liberal.
Mark, blasphemy never helped an argument.
You know what I think? You know what I think, little man? Frist is watching Bush and his agenda go right over, right down the tubes, my friend. And rather than go down with him, he's moving to the left on an issue most Americans agree with to make himself look more moderate for the 2008 election.
No, you're wrong.
Yes, this is nothing but desperation, Lawton. Rats leaving a sinking ship. Your neocon revolution failed. Even though you control Congress and the White House, party's over, buddy. The backlash is here. We're dragging you to the left. We're dragging you to the left.
No! I don't know how to think anymore. First we're against the stem cells, and now we're for the stem cells. And when are we leaving Iraq anyway? When the job's done or next year? I need structure. I need a clear message for people to tell me what to do. Republicans are fighting like Mommy and Daddy when Daddy used to drink. Don't fight. Please put away the belt. I'll get you another bourbon, Daddy.
Oh, no. Dude.
Don't
you're going too deep into this, man.
Don't,
you're just taking it easy.
Mind, Daddy.
You're getting too deep, man. Just please pull it together, man. Oh, man.
Please,
this is, please just pull
don't
it together.
Fight.
Just take it easy, will you? Wow.
Don't fight.
Wow. Oh, my God. His whole childhood just came out.
Yeah, right?
You all right?
I think we'll start with 1,000 Bush clones and install them as mayors and governors and judges.
It's the boys
and then
from Brazil.
We'll crank out a few more just for spare parts.
Oh, my God. No.
That's what we're thinking.
Goodbye.
Maybe 500 more.
Goodbye, Lawton.
All right. I'm going to see you at CBGB's Friday. God loves you.
All right, I'll try, man. I'll try. Oh, my God.
Wow.
That Bush Army, that sounded horrible. So, Rafael Palmeiro, I'm not going to pretend to know what's going on here. I'm just reporting the news. The Orioles' first baseman was suspended for 10 days for violating Major League Baseball's steroids policy on Monday.
This 10 games, not 10 days.
Oh, 10 games.
Yeah.
That's different.
It is, because they don't play every day.
And this is a guy this is a guy that said this to Congress. No, you don't have it? What, you thinking about your dad?
He said, hey, I don't do no steroids, period.
Did we lose you somewhere in family land there, Chris? Chris blew off some steam about his father, and now he's completely useless. Did you find it? Are we going to be able to pull it together?
I have never used steroids, period. I do not know how to say it any more clearly than that. Never. The reference to me in Mr. Canseco's book is absolutely false.
Did he say that at a wedding party? What was that?
Damn, what was that music in the background? Was that some congressional boogie music or something? What was that?
So, Dan Pashman, baseball fan,
yes.
What does this mean for the game?
It means a lot, Mark. This season is the first season that we've actually had real steroid testing with actual penalties and repercussions in baseball.
Yeah.
And Rafael Palmeiro is by far the biggest name player. This guy is probably going to be in the Hall of, or would have, now it's up for debate, was a pretty much a guaranteed Hall of Famer.
Now it's going to be the steroid Hall of Fame, the mutant Hall of Fame.
Right, and that sound we heard was him just 5 months ago testifying before Congress, denying adamantly that he had ever done steroids.
Am I right in saying that he's the highest profile player to be nailed for this?
Absolutely, by far. Yeah. I mean, every other person who's been nailed so far this season has really been like a scrub, a guy who's barely on any team.
Yeah, Palmeiro is, I think, the 7th player who's been caught so far since the testing policy went into effect.
And, you know, the Major League Baseball steroid thing is just terrible. Because did you know that you are only allowed to be tested once, and then that's it? If you
The opposite of fail is
pass.
if you pass that test,
is that something your father never said to you?
But if you pass that test, you don't have to take another drug test at all this entire season.
Right. You only take one. The whole policy is a joke. You only have to take one test all year. So if you get your test in the first week of the season, then
How'd this idiot get busted then?
Well,
I mean to call him an idiot because I know he's a baseball player.
No, you can call him an idiot.
Yeah, but I mean, if it's one test a year, I mean, can't you get the fake pee or do something? I mean, what?
Well, because the speculation is that they were waiting to test most of the players until the last part of the season to force them to have to wait to not be able to start shooting up again.
When they're filled with it?
Yeah.
Remember, too, they don't have to shoot up anymore.
Right.
The stuff that Barry Bonds is alleged to have used was a cream, a topical cream that you just rub in.
Yeah. Transdermal technology is the way to go.
They're going to have lollipops soon.
How about just a steroid patch or a heroin patch or maybe a double espresso patch? It's all going to be patches. They're going to have to make that more
appealing. A double espresso patch?
Why not? It's just the
same. Save me $3.
Well, the only reason they don't do that, it's because it's not very appealing just to go into a store and go, give me the Band-Aid. You know what I mean? Packaging is so important. How are you going to package it?
You know, the interesting thing to me about Palmeiro, though.
No, how are you going to package it?
Okay. I'll figure it out. No, I mean, the interesting thing, this was the good guy during the congressional hearings.
Right.
He was the guy that everybody said, well, I mean, if Rafael Palmeiro says he doesn't do it, well, then I guess, you know, he really doesn't do it. Mm. Everybody else was tainted. And the central point of this was he was named in Jose Canseco's book as someone who did use. So his denial and his I didn't do it period had a lot of resonance because people really wanted to hate Canseco.
And what's interesting was that during those same, you know, that's a great point, Mark, and during those same hearings in Congress, there were other players, apparently Mark McGuire, who refused to answer whether or not they'd ever done steroids. So it was very newsworthy at that time that Palmeiro was one of the players who would answer the question and was banging on the table saying, I never did steroids.
I say that in 10 years when we're doing this show from a bunker, you know, from another planet, because we have to. It's the only legal place we can do it from.
Right.
I guess I'm being a little cynical. I say that steroids are going to be common, accepted in national sports. In professional sports.
And oh, Chris, they're not now?
Chris, we're going to get you a My Parents Love Me patch. You're just going to get a patch that say Mommy and Daddy on it, and you'll feel, like, supported. Yeah.
It bleeds ecstasy into your bloodstream.
Yeah, something like that.
My mom loves me.
Yeah, I know she does. And that's important. You know what I mean? Your mother's love. My mother loves me, you know, sometimes, you know, when I now it's getting weird with me.
When you're not fat.
Hey! Which would mean that right but fortunate for me,
I used to love the fat guy.
So I guess that means me and you are going to be getting along fine, aren't we?
Keep on eating that.
Yeah, all right, buddy. So you know what? We're going to tell you how much money people waste on bottled water in just a second, and just, you know, why that's so futile. Is that the word?
Yes.
Sure.
Futile. 46 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning's Edition.
Morning's Edition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
All right, 50 past the hour, it's Land This Thing. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
We're all going straight to hell.
Again?
Yes.
It's Mayor of America Radio's Morning's Edition. Brendan McDonald took a three-day weekend because his
fiancée. And that's why we're all going straight to hell.
His fiancée returned from a month in England, and I tell you, the guy looks peaceful, zen. He couldn't be more happy looking. Look at that.
Yeah.
Relaxed. He keeps saying, it's like, it's just because I'm a little off. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's been a long weekend for Brendan.
The glow of love.
Yes, sir. He looks like he actually took off a few pounds, and he's a pencil-thin guy anyway. He looks gone.
Yeah, it was not a treadmill action, I don't think.
Oh, goody.
Unless you're going to hell. We're not saying you're the one going to hell.
Riley just likes to say it. It makes him feel better. He knows he's going to be there. He's going to be driving the bus to hell.
That's right. I'm the conductor on the express.
We'll be broadcasting live from hell this Friday. CBGB's legendary rock club. We have a little Stephen Van Zandt from the E Street Band and the Sopranos scheduled to appear, plus comedian Jim Gaffigan. We got some live music, free coffee, giveaways, you know, the business, all the regular characters. That's Friday morning at CBGB's. It's the corner of Bowery and Bleecker from 6 to 9. The following Saturday, I'll be in Seattle at Giggles Comedy Club, Saturday, August 6th. for two shows. You want to go to that, go to giggles comedy club.com for a little information about that. Let's finish up on a couple of stories here. Oil shot up to $62 a barrel in light of King Fahd's death. The Saudis' oil policy is not expected to change now that power has shifted to his brother, so I guess it must have been out of respect from the industry.
Yeah, just let's jack up the price of oil. Why just, not?
Exactly.
Make the Yankees play a little more.
Exactly. Americans consume 24 gallons of water on average in 2004. I guess that's a yearly average. That's second only to carbonated drinks. Americans will spend $9.8 billion on bottled water. What a racket. We fell for it. How long did it take for that? I mean, this is a brilliant, brilliant bit of American ingenuity in terms of marketing and capitalism. I mean, can you believe this? They actually got us buying $9.8 billion in bottled water a year?
We got a half an aisle in my local supermarket that is nothing but bottled water.
All right, ounce for ounce, apparently it costs more than gasoline. Globally, it is a $46 billion industry. That is mind-blowing to me. A study from the Archives of Family Medicine based on tap water in Cleveland. Now, it's Cleveland. That almost sounds like a joke setup.
Yeah, right.
Found that nearly a quarter of the samples of bottled water had significantly more bacteria than tap water. So in studies, basically, there's no real taste difference and no real nutritional advantage, but we spend $9.8 billion on bottled water.
Yeah, on something that, by the way, until probably the mid-1970s, we took out of the tap for whatever the price was we paid the water company.
Yeah, there's comedians that had been doing jokes about this for a while. And Penn Jillette Show, Penn and Teller Show, the one on Showtime that, I forget what it's called, but it gets to the bottom of all the myths. Mm-hmm. They did one on bottled water, and they did one of those experiments where they had a guy out back with a hose filling up water, and they actually set up... They had these two people go into a restaurant, and they gave them a water menu.
Yeah.
Like from all these different, like a wine menu or a beer menu.
A beer menu.
They gave them a water menu, and then people ordered water, and they were sitting there going, it does taste different. There's just a guy out back with a hose filling these things up. But he did a lot to prove this. I mean, I buy bottled water, but I think what's the most interesting about this is how they sold us on the appetite for water. At some point, people decided they needed to drink water constantly. Like, you hear that you got to drink a gallon a day. You got to drink this much water. For me, it's not so much, I mean, I'll drink tap water, but I put it in a filter pitcher. Like, I got a Brita filter to take the lead out. That's my big concern is that these old pipes in the city, you can get some pretty crappy water between rust and lead. So I filter it through a Brita, and then I fill up water bottles with it and bring it to the gym and stuff. But I'll buy water, but that's because I feel like I need it.
Well, it's one of those things that they convinced us we had to have. And there have been a number of things like that, Mark, where people have paid a minimal amount of things, like phone service, for example. And suddenly, people who used to pay, $5, $6, $12 a month for phone service, you got cell phones, you got all these different things. There's no such thing as basic stuff anymore. There's no such thing as basic tap water. You have to have bottled water. Now, I must say, my daughter has grown up on bottled water, and she enjoys it.
But don't you think differently? I mean, we've grown to distrust the tap, like something dirty is going to come out of there. And there's evidence and proof that that's not true. You think your daughter will be okay with tap water?
No, she's fine with tap water. But the thing is, psychologically, we've been led to believe that we will be healthier people if we drink water out of a bottle.
We've been duped. They've got us. They screwed our brains up. That's why we buy bottled water. Don't do it. Put Poland Springs out of business just for fun. What the hell? You know what I mean? I need some water now.
There you go.
I'm not going to get it out of the bottle. So, all right. Well, look, for those of you who are just tuning in, here's a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's morning's edition, Cliff Notes. Scientists say hurricanes are becoming more intense thanks to global warming. Scientists call the findings both surprising and alarming. Surprising because no one seems to be doing anything about it, and alarming because no one seems to be doing anything about it. President Bush dismissed the idea of global warming and said that hurricanes are evildoers that hate our dryness. The Army is now recruiting the poverty-stricken people of America, Samoa, Micronesia, and the Northern Mariana Islands. Officers say islanders make fierce fighters in Iraq because they hate the insurgents' fancy lifestyle. Damn. I hate when I screw up a word. Economic analysts worry that if too many enormous Samoans join the Army, Los Angeles nightclubs will run short of bouncers. A new book says Jimi Hendrix pretended he was gay to stay out of the Army. This could explain why the song lyric, "Hey Joe, where are you going with that gun in your hand," was originally written as, "Hey Joe, is that a gun in your hand, or are you just happy to see me?" Come on, man. Oh. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. No, go ahead. Buy the big SUV. You're supporting terrorists and killer hurricanes. Wake up, sheeple. The machines want us dead. There you go. So tomorrow we're going to have a guy come in and actually talk to us about our cable and phone companies ripping us off. Remember we talked about this?
Yeah.
And now we're going to get a guy that actually knows about why we're paying 27 bills.
Yeah, 27 bills with 27 different taxes and additional charges.
For the cable, though, I don't know about the cable. I'm curious.
Oh, there's
about
a line
that.
Charge. There's all kinds of stuff. He's going to tell us, though.
That's good. This guy, Morgan Gingrich. And also Gerald Posner is going to be here to talk about the Saudis. That's important because that's the great unspoken. You know?
And might we hear from a certain future Mark Maron?
I hope so.
I hope so. Good day today, Maron.
Yeah, Riley.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on